The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello and welcome to the Miles to Memories podcast. I'm Sean Coomer, your host, joined as always by Joe Chung from As the Joe Flies and Disney Deciphered. Joe is getting ready for Election Day, an off-year Election Day. We don't have those here, I don't think. We were just talking about whether anybody votes in those types of elections, and I'm proud to say that Joe does. So congratulations, Joe.
That's right. And yeah, I don't know. It's been a more recent thing since, you know, when you get involved with the schools and stuff like that, you meet city council people and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I don't have any strong opinions, but I feel like, you know, might as well vote. We are voting for our mayor, which I think should not be competitive, but, you know, that is, to your point, Sean, the fact that, you know, you never know what turnout's going to be. I'm like, I don't think that the mayoral race should be competitive, but you never know. So might as well put your one vote out there. I prefer to vote early typically, but there was only 3 days of early voting since it's such a, you know, it is an off year. You know, the big one is next year. But I think it's good that for kind of society that my kids get school off. It's partially because of polling stuff, but at the same time, I don't get school off. So one of us had to take off work. So that wasn't too great. I mean, we could have paid for after school stuff, but we're not going to do that.
I wonder if it's a good or a bad thing for local elections to have it in like the off year, because they probably get more attention. The candidates get more attention than if it's during a presidential year or when Congress is running. So that's probably good for that. I don't know. I don't think we get days off for Election Day here anymore. I remember back when I was a kid, the old days, you know, they would set up the polling centers in the schools, and you would see like the booths, and that was back in the like hanging Chad days where they would like poke a hole through the ballot with their pencil. And I remember being in awe of that in middle school, watching people do that and thinking it was so adult and so cool. And then, yeah, by the time I voted, it was all electronic machines. So I've never actually poked a hole through a ballot like the good old days.
Yeah, in Massachusetts, we like take a Sharpie and like fill in a line, and then it reads it like a Scantron, like a, you know, multiple choice test that no longer exists anymore. Now that, you know, did Sean Reese go through this? Like all the standardized testing and stuff is like on the computer now. Like PSATs, we just had PSATs at our school a couple weeks ago. It's all on the computer. It's just like so bizarre to me. Because, you know, you and me, we filled out like little circles, right? And they were like, you know, fill out the circle all the way in and all that stuff. But like all the standardized testing, I don't know about the SATs, but I'm assuming so. Like it's just all computerized now, which is just so bizarre to me. This new world we live in.
The kids these days will never get the experience of those Scantrons. I mean, every test was a Scantron back in the day too. It wasn't in, you know, digital. And yeah, even with my daughter, just seeing how almost all of her lessons are online as far as her testing and everything she's doing, whether it's, you know, the standardized stuff or the regular stuff. Things have changed, Joe. We're old. The world is different than we did. We're actually at the age where we got to kind of experience the old world and the new world, even in school. Like I said, watching people poke holes in ballots. And then by the time I was 18, it was digital. But just every way we learned, I remember when they just added in like typing classes, and that was a big deal for us, just to be able to get on a computer to type.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, like just before we got on, I got a call and it was asking me about a student, and they're like, his attendance is like 20%. You know, why does he have a B in your class? And I was like, attendance is only worth 10%. Like these are seniors, right? Like attendance is only worth 10%. No, it might only be worth 5% in my class. And all the work is posted on Google Classroom. And so he's done all the work and I've graded his work and it's been fine. I don't like, it's like one of those problems that you kind of don't anticipate. If there's a school-wide policy, I mean, there are policies about like attendance and stuff like that. But to me, it's like, well, you can fail him on the school level, but he did the work. Like, I don't know what you want me to do. Like, I'm not going to like fail the kid, you know, because and it doesn't seem plagiarized, you know, as, to the best of my ability when I try to check it and stuff like that. So it's just crazy. These are like things that we never would have had to deal with when we were in school, and like the majority of things were on paper, or, you know, even later on in our education, we were using computers, but we were like printing stuff out. You know, I remember like in college, like I would be going to the copy store, Noman Copy was what it was called. And we would just like make all these photocopies of like crap that we were handing in, or to keep a copy for ourselves, or like whatever. Like none of that happens anymore. It's all just click a submit button online.
Yeah, it's a different world. My favorite thing about growing up, and we'll get on from being nostalgic, is that our elementary school didn't have a Xerox copier. Did you ever have the place that had like the purple copier, like a duplicator? And so everything was in like purple ink. And it was like an old school. I don't even know how the technology worked, but it looked very different, very low quality. Good times.
That and transparencies. Like, do you remember you used to have a transparency machine? And then for those of you who are too young, it was like it would project onto the board, but it was kind of like a sheet of blank paper, almost looks like glass, but it was more like paper consistency. And you would be able to write on it, either with permanent marker or dry erase marker. And so you could like mark up text so that kids could see it on the board and stuff like that. I remember even when I started teaching in 2004, one of the first teachers I observed, she was so good with the transparency machine and like marking up, you know, she taught literacy type stuff. So you have to be really good with marking stuff. And that's just all, you know, my kids were trying to explain to, this is like how old we, like, Jess and I are already too old. Our kids were explaining to us the smart boards that their teachers have in their classrooms, and they were like explaining how they use them. And Jess and I were kind of like, I don't know, if they put a smart board in our room, like, would we be able to figure out how to use it? I'm not even sure. I mean, I probably, you know, we're pretty tech savvy, but it's just crazy.
It's good though that things are changing, right? Because what do they always say, that we're still teaching kids like they did 150 years ago, even with modern technology. So it does need to change, and there's things that are better. But, you know, we got that cool experience where it all changed while we were in school, which always made it fun. So we should talk about travel a little bit. The big news this week, Joe, this is kind of in the MTM drinking game, I guess, but we'll talk Disney, not really, but Six Flags and Cedar Fair announced a merger. And this is actually, I think, big travel-related story, mainly because this combined company will have 42 parks around the United States, with a couple in Canada and one in Mexico, but the vast majority in the United States. I don't know if a lot of people follow these companies, but I think that people who follow the industry, Cedar Fair has a very good reputation, whereas Six Flags doesn't. But I think to the average person out there, Six Flags has big brand recognition. The new combined company is basically going to be run mostly by the Cedar Fair people. That's the company that owns Cedar Point. You probably heard of in a lot of those big parks, Kings Island, Kings Dominion, Canada's Wonderland, Knott's Berry Farm, and Six Flags will be the name of the company. So run mostly by Cedar Fair people, with a new combined company name of Six Flags. So while it's not a huge travel-related story, I think everybody out there, when you're traveling around the U.S., you will visit one of these parks. Crazy to see one company owning 42 parks.
It's pretty wild. And the thing that stood out to me was that they were going to keep the Six Flags name. And I was like, you know, Six Flags, again, dating ourselves. I'm always thinking of that old bald guy with the funny glasses and playing that Venga Boy song.
Mr. Six.
Remember those commercials? Yeah. And I'm just
for sure.
I'm just like, you know, these aren't the highest quality, or, you know, those commercials. It's just, you're not advertising any sort of bougie theme park by any means. It was just like a very silly, fun theme park. Of course, I think I've said before, you know, I had season passes to Six Flags Great Adventure growing up in New Jersey. It was about 45 minutes away from where I lived, and I had a lot of happy summer memories there. So I think it kind of just reminds me of, I feel like when Continental and United merged, at least at the very least, Continental's, you know, salient to our lives, Continental's mileage redemption situation was like so much better, you know. And I remember when they decided to take on the United name, I was kind of like, oh, you really want to, like, that's the name you want to take? And that's kind of what I think about Six Flags and Cedar Fair, because Cedar Fair, you know, at least amongst theme park, but I guess to your point, amongst theme park nerds, and even like a casual theme park nerd like myself, Cedar Fair has a much better reputation. But in terms of brand recognition, like, everyone knows what Six Flags is.
Yeah, there's a reason that even in Saudi Arabia right now, there's a Six Flags park under construction. It's the brand is, you know, more well-known just among the regular people. But this is interesting in that this is just a sign of consolidation in industry. You point the airline industry and mergers and acquisitions there, and this is very similar. Both of these companies are the biggest sort of regional theme park operators, but it became harder and harder for them to operate. Both have heavy debt loads, so a lot of that quote-unquote synergies, all that stuff will happen. But there are very different ways that these parks were run. And as you said, Cedar Fair tend to run their parks a little bit better. But this isn't a purchase. Cedar Fair is not buying Six Flags. This is basically both parties coming together. I think Cedar Fair shareholders get a little over 51% of the company, Six Flags over 48%. But it does seem, based on early guidance, that this will be going more in the higher quality direction, and that's a hopeful thing. There are some people who think that this could get blocked for antitrust reasons. I don't see that happening. Disney and Universal, by market cap, are much bigger players. SeaWorld, a lot of independent parks around the country as well. There's only a handful of markets like Northern California, Southern California, where they have parks from both companies currently. So this will get done. There's not a lot of headwinds to it. And what you'll probably see is the parks get a little bit more expensive in the long term, like the passes that you get to get that get you into a Six Flags park or a Cedar Fair park. Those are probably going to go up because you're going to have access to more parks. And this company really going to focus on driving revenue, because this has been the problem for both of these companies as they struggle in this post-COVID world. So the idea being they're a bigger, stronger company. We've heard that before. Will it be good for consumers? I would just say the Six Flags situation has been so bad the last couple of years that anything will be an improvement. Getting Cedar Fair managers in there to those parks, I think, will be an improvement. So I'm all for this, and hopefully it helps them compete. But with higher quality stuff, we need higher quality things as we see Universal and Disney step it up. Not that these parks will ever get to that level, but just overall, we need better quality stuff.
I definitely agree. And I think the whole theme park industry is in an interesting, you know, just entertainment in general, just competing for people's dollars is in a very interesting point in time where, you know, who knows whether these things will survive. It feels like Universal is in the pole position for like growth in the US market, at least. But I think Six Flags, Cedar Point, this is what they're doing to try to remain competitive. You know, SeaWorld, Busch Gardens, they're all, I mean, that's the same company, right? But they're all like trying to keep things just keep making money, I guess, and keep entertaining America's youth and adults like us.
Yeah, I mean, the world is experiential, right? That's what young people want, and they have to compete. And Universal's being super aggressive. Like you said, they're moving beyond their giant parks and going into the regional markets. They're constructing a family-friendly regional theme park in Texas. They're designing their year-round haunt in Las Vegas. And so we will see, I think, these companies become more regional entertainment companies and maybe see some of the gaps between the Six Flags of the world and the Universals of the world change a little bit. But like I said, hopefully this just means better quality. This one time where you have consolidation that I actually think will be good, mainly because Six Flags has just been so bad for so long. And as they've struggled financially, they've made cutbacks that have really hurt the guest experience. And it seems like Cedar Fair has been able to operate. Really quick before we move on, did you see that Alaska Airlines debuted their Mickey's Toontown livery? You know, Alaska's done quite a few, I think, Disney liveries over the years. But this one is Toontown, so it's specific to the parks. You got Goofy on the back, Donald, Daisy, all the friends. So I know you like this.
I did like it. It looks really cool. Still not as cool as the Hello Kitty plane. I have no like attachment to Hello Kitty except for it being very cute. But I think, you know, the Hello Kitty plane, which I still hopefully will get on one day, just the fact that like everything inside is themed to Hello Kitty, you know, I feel like that's next level. Whereas, you know, this livery, I know we've seen Star Wars livery on ANA, I think. And did they ever have, you know, and then like Jets livery on JetBlue. I think JetBlue has like one plane that is Jets livery. Like, you know, I mean, it's fine, but if you have the stuff inside, like the soft product, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I wish we had more of that. As far as like custom liveries, my favorites are like American has custom liveries for all of the airlines that became part of American, which there's a lot of them over the years, you know, from all the mergers and acquisitions. And some of them are quite nostalgic, I guess. They're very old school in the way that they look. And I'm always happy when I fly into an American Airlines hub and I see one of those planes and I've had a chance to fly on them. But you're right. Once you get on the plane, no matter what the paint is on the outside, unless it's Hello Kitty, generally it's just a normal flight. And it feels like there could be more opportunity there. But I think this isn't the first time. Alaska's done quite a few Disney ones over the years, and we've seen other ones. My favorite is with Frontier, because I can't go an episode without talking about Frontier. But the animal on the back of a Frontier plane always has a name too, which sometimes the Frontier crew will allude to. That's the only reason I know it, and I never remember to pay attention or to be like, oh, I've flown on this plane or that plane. But I love how they sort of differentiate. It's fun.
Yeah, it definitely keeps things interesting. Hey, I wonder, you know, I was talking about the Continental United merger, and actually, you know, they kept the Continental's logo and went to United. These airlines that have merged, like, they should go old school, like, you know, retro uniforms for, like, did you see the Eagles uniforms a couple weeks back? Shout out to Ryan if you're listening. Like, those looked so good. You know, because it's nostalgia from us seeing Randall Cunningham or whoever play in them in the 80s. You know, they have throwback football uniforms or sports uniforms. They should definitely do throwback liveries. You know, just put on the old United, what was it, blue, orange, and red, something random. But, you know, put that on one plane that you can use and just help us hanker back to the old times.
Speaking of United, Continental, and nostalgia, I flew back from Costa Rica. We recorded the last episode while I was there. Everything went great with United again. No complaints there. But I was on one of those ancient 737s from United that used to be a Continental 737. If you remember, they had DirecTV on them, very small screens. And it was like cutting edge tech when Continental put those on the planes, and then they've slowly been taken out. And there, I don't think there can be a lot of those left, but I certainly was on one of them. So it was a good throwback to the old liveries. Continental was definitely a better airline than United. United, I feel like, married up. But it's always weird when those companies come together and then, you know, you get a lot of the management. This happened with U.S. Airways and American, right? U.S. Airways basically took over American, but American sort of is the name that lived on. We'll see that with Six Flags and Cedar Fair, where Six Flags will keep on, but a lot of the management from Cedar Fair is there. And we've seen it in other places. We saw it in the gaming industry with Caesars Entertainment. They got bought out by Eldorado during COVID a couple years ago. Most people never know that today's Caesars Entertainment isn't the same one that you had in 2020. It's a whole different company. Bought it out, kept the name. That happens all the time.
Yeah. If Apple buys Disney, you know, they're going to always leave it the Disney brand, even if Apple owns it. You know, those rumors have been rampant for the last year or two.
We're not going to get Mickey Mouse wearing a Vision Pro headset. Come on. I think there's some good synergy that could happen there.
Yeah, please no. Please no.
All right, so Marriott back in the news with this Bonvoy business offer that's come back. This offer was out earlier in the year, but they just brought it back, and I like it because it can have a lot of value. Now, there are a couple of like ways to think about free certificate offers. One is that overall, they have more rules. You know, it's harder to redeem them. You can lose the certificates if you don't use them. Whereas if you get points offers, you can have the points in your account. You get more flexibility. But this is a pretty good offer. It gives you 3 free night awards after you use your card for $6,000 spend in the first 6 months. So you get a little bit of extra time to make the spending. And each one of these certs is good for up to $50,000. So potentially you get a full value of $150,000. And then you remember Marriott allows you to top these certs off with up to 15,000 points per cert. So if you wanted to get a hotel at 65,000 points a night, you could use the cert plus 15,000, which is nice. You also get a free night award up to 35,000 each year on your account anniversary with this. This is also a business card, so not showing up on your personal credit report for 524. I think this is a good offer for people who are in that sort of ecosystem. They're looking for Marriott nights. Have a use for these, but $50,000 could get you a decent hotel room, getting 3 of these. And then if you really have a few extra points to top them up, you can get a very, very nice hotel room for 3 nights with this offer.
Yeah, I like these free night awards. They kind of just make things simpler, especially you can use up to the 50,000. Of course, I think what you said definitely bears repeating. You have to have a use for them. Most times with Bonvoy, they expire about a year after you earn them. And there are some reports of people getting credit for stuff that they weren't able to redeem or didn't manage to redeem. But you can't really count on that. So if you don't have a way to use them, then you know you can be left with just like, unlike points, when you get the points, like, those aren't going to expire or whatever. I mean, I guess technically 36 months or however long you have to have activity or whatever. But, you know, it, for all intents and purposes, they're not going to expire. But with these free night certificates, you have to worry about them expiring. And so if your plans change or something goes wrong and you're not able to use them, you know, you could be stuck having like a sign-up bonus of nothing.
Yeah, that's always the downside. And we've all done that where we sign up for something with the best intentions and then don't get to use it. I mean, at least with Marriott, you have a lot of options and it's really easy to do a last minute redemption if you have to. But the real key here is trying to find good properties where you're getting the best value, not staying at a, you know, at an airport property or some old Marriott or something. For 65K especially, and I look at these kind of that way, I have points where I can top these up. I usually want to get the best value or the best property for the cert. So I'm more than happy to throw in the extra 15K if it means I'm getting a really neat property. So this is definitely worth a look if you have it. Normal rules apply for these types of cards. And we'll put a link in the description so you can see the full offer, the full details. While we're talking about Marriott, here's a positive thing. They've updated their Suite Night Awards, giving it a new name and basically saying they're going to make it better. I was just having a conversation the other day with somebody who is a ambassador elite with Marriott, meaning they spend a lot of money. They have basically the top tier status with them. Tons of Suite Night Awards in their account. Can't ever use them. Basically, this person was saying they have 10 that are expiring pretty soon and that they just never get accepted. And that's been my case with the Suite Night Awards. You can try to apply them to a reservation. And generally, I think it's 5 days out that they'll start to try to get the room for you. But it's been very difficult. And that's because there's a lot of restrictions. One, there's not a lot of room categories that qualify for them. And part of these changes, Marriott has said they're going to expand the room categories, 20% more premium rooms and suites. So hopefully you'll have a better chance of getting accepted for that. Also, they're giving it more brands. So now you can redeem the Suite Night Awards at Ritz-Carlton, Edition, Aloft, Element, and Protea hotels. I hope I said that right, Joe. I've never been in a Protea hotel. Couldn't tell you what one looks like, but you can,
redeem a Suite Night Award. So.
And then a new name too, Nightly Upgrade Awards instead of Suite Night Awards. Good to see that they're making these a little bit better. I just have never been able to get one to work. So that's been my experience.
Yeah, that's good to hear. I don't know, I'm always a cynic about this stuff. It's like, are they making it more complicated unnecessarily to make it harder? But I think you take it at face value. They're trying to improve the program. I've heard people, you know, I'm not that invested in Bonvoy, so I wouldn't know, but I've heard people complain for years about, you know, it's like the majority of people complain and the people who can use it well or have properties that they use it well on, like, just are kind of bragging about how they, not bragging, but like happy about how they get it done all the time. So it's hopefully positive changes that are going to make things easier for people. And yeah, definitely you got to look into the fine print and get your slide rule out to figure out how to do it all.
Yeah, and hopefully their intentions are to make these more redeemable so people lose them less. It seems like that's happening a lot, and it's one of those things people aren't happy about. In my conversation with this other member, I was just telling him how Hyatt works because this person wasn't a Hyatt person. They're not really in this hobby. So I like the way Hyatt works where you get, let's say, 4 of those a year. Obviously, you're earning them by stays, not just purely with your globalist status. But if you get the 4 of those a year, they're good for up to 7 nights. It's really nice, though, because you can identify the suite well ahead of time. And as long as they're selling the standard suite, you can upgrade to that. So I do like that. Although Hyatt's system isn't perfect, and those of us who have been around Hyatt for the last few years know it was much easier to get suite upgrades applied in the old times compared to now, where there just seems to be many more elites compared to in the past. And that's really the problem with anything. They have limited supply. And that's actually why I think that it's great that Marriott has, I mean, who knows, it says 20% more, if that's marketing talk, if that's going to be real. But at least they're trying to open up more rooms to this. And they're also increasing compensation for the hotels, the way that they pay the hotels out, which gives them more incentive to give these away. Because they don't, in normal times, let's say they have low occupancy, if they take one of these certs and they're not getting compensated, they still got to pay the extra to clean the room. They're not really going to want to do that. So if they get more compensation for using this, it's more incentive for the hotels to accept them and open up their inventory for that, which is a good thing. So good times all around. I wonder if people out there, you can hit us up on Twitter or whatever, but if you have had success with these Suite Night Awards, or if you're like me and you just keep trying to submit them and nothing ever happens, because that's just always been the case. I don't really get suites very often. I don't push hard with Marriott, and I don't stay with them all too often, but I've had platinum status now for a few years, and with that status at least, it hasn't been great compared to Hyatt, where I know that I'm pretty much going to get the upgrade as long as it's available publicly.
Speaking of there being too many elites because of various promos, I want to talk a little bit about JetBlue Mosaic, or more specifically, a offer that came out on JetBlue credit cards, or I got for my card. I think I saw it advertised online, so I think it was for a lot of people. It's not super exciting, but I did want to note a couple things about the Mosaic program, and this is offered to non-Mosaics as well. So basically, the deal, quote unquote, is that if you spend $20,000 on your JetBlue card between now and December 31st, so in 2023, you're going to get 10 bonus tiles for 2023 and then also 10 bonus tiles for 2024. So that's like 20 bonus tiles total. Just as a reminder, JetBlue has gone to this new annoying tile system where 50 tiles gets you Mosaic 1, 100 Mosaic 2, 150 Mosaic 3, 200 Mosaic 4. To get the tiles, either you spend $1,000 on your JetBlue credit card, or you spend $100 on JetBlue flights. Or you can get Mosaic 3 status by just matching from Delta Platinum when Delta got all their elites mad, you know. So people like Mark Osterman jumped me and my Mosaic status level by matching. So jerk. But anyway, he's not even listening. But I thought the interesting thing with the tiles, you know, it's not an amazing deal. I would say, like, unless you're lazy, like some people, aka me, I don't know if I would spend $20,000. But it's like better than a kick in the head if you're using the card already. And the way I would think about it is, you know, you're going to earn 30 tiles for $20,000. So like, you know, 50% more than you would normally earn. But the thing that I was thinking about is, one of their perks is to give you 20 bonus tiles. So if you get the 10 tiles in 2024, you know, and you get to Mosaic 1, I think is where the first time you can choose the bonus tiles. Because I remember this year, like, I didn't have to spend as much on my card to get to Mosaic status, because one of their perks is to give you, is it 20 or 15 bonus tiles? But either way, it was like tiles for free or whatever, or not for free, but, you know, it was like a perk that you could choose. So I think that's a nice way to kind of juice things up. Overall, Ed is a 20-tile bonus. So overall, you know, not super exciting, but if you are chasing JetBlue Mosaic or things like that, like, this is a way to, you know, especially if you're doing it via spending means on your credit card, this is a way to kind of get you further along. And so I'm debating whether to just, I don't know if I can spend $20,000 by the end of the year. It would take some work that, you know, I don't necessarily want to put in. But if I could do it, then just getting a head start on 2024 would be good. I was also thinking that if you, especially if you have Mosaic, like, you're all set for your 2024 Mosaic because you've already done the tile thing for 2023. I was thinking if your statement closes in January and you put the $20,000 in spend in December for your statement closing in January, hopefully you're following along with me here, then you're basically starting in 2024 for your 2025 status with 30 tiles.
This really is like that meme from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia where he's at the board trying to explain all of the crazy stuff. I remember when airline programs were simple, Joe. You just got in an airplane. If you flew 500 miles, they gave you 500 miles and life was good. And now you got all this bonus stuff and all this ecosystem stuff and all these different tiles and loyalty points. And man, it gets complicated, doesn't it? Like, you know, you keep up on one program because it means a lot to you, but then another program does this. And what's the world come to? It's all so damn complicated these days.
It really is. Also, again, just updating what we were talking about with the Bonvoy card before. Let's just say that a friend of mine, while we were on this podcast, Sean, asked about expiring free night awards that a friend of mine might have had, two to be exact, and Bonvoy chat said that they are no longer extending the free night award. So definitely make sure you get them used. Otherwise, you know, that bonus is no good to you.
Yeah, always count on using them. Don't ever count on the courtesy extension or points. Like, for example, Hyatt will give you, if it's a free night earned through stays, not from the credit card, they will give you usually 10,000 points for a category 1 through 4, 20,000 for a category 1 through 7 cert. But the day that you count on that happening is the day that they stop doing it. It's not an official thing. And then, like you said, in many cases with Marriott, they've been saying no. I've heard anecdotal cases where people have gotten yes. And there's different types of certs, too. There's certs earned through stays. There's stays earned through credit cards, so they tend to treat them better. But like you said, better safe than sorry. Just use them and don't count on the fact that they're going to give you something for them if you don't use them.
Yeah, I found that just in terms of advice for this, especially with my Hyatt ones, yes, I've gotten points for them before, but I found that I've become, and I think for Hilton, it's the same way. I've become a lot more, I used to be, oh, it's category 1 through 4 certificate. I got to use it for category 4. Like, I got to get my maximum value and stuff like that. But, you know, you find that, especially, you know, the busier you are, the busier your life is, you know, if you're in your 20s and like this is the only game you play, this is like your big hobby in life, then you probably can have the time to maximize it. Or, you know, if you're traveling around the world for a while, like, I'm sure you found plenty of uses for your free night certificates. But once you're in like the grind of like regular life, you know, I feel like it's better to use your award on something that doesn't seem like max value than to lose it completely. So I've used it for like random one-off stays when I'm like, just so I don't have to wake up at 5 a.m. to go to a soccer tournament, like that kind of stuff. You know, I can wake up, you know, it's only 15 minutes away instead of like an hour and a half away, that kind of stuff. Just use it. I think hoarding it, unless you're like super, and you also don't know how your plans will change. Like, so for example, for my friend's certificates that expired, like, my friend planned to use them. I'm doing a lot of air quotes for Sean, which of course none of you can see, but my friend like planned to use them, but then, you know, there was illness, you know, things happened and they weren't able to use, and they were going to be used like 2 weeks before they expired. So it's like, well, you know, out of luck. So definitely just get them done and don't worry about it too much.
I think a lot of that comes with the mentality of this community and just people who are always looking for deals, right? It hurts us to not maximize and not get the best deal. But when you actually factor in first that you're the stress of trying to make sure you don't have these things expire, the amount of time you're going to put in to try to find the best redemption and maximize everything versus, like you say, I have a quick need, let me use it, let me move on. Now it's not on my mind that I got to try to figure out how to use it. I'm not spending all this time trying to do all this. It's just done. It benefited my life. Like, that's the way to be, but it's very hard sometimes when you have that background of wanting to maximize everything. I know that's sort of always been in my personality. As I've gotten older, I've done much better with not doing that. But things like that would hurt, right? It would bother me to use a category 1 through 4 for a category 2 or something. And I still try not to do it. To your point, it depends on how much travel I have. But these days, if I know that it's going to be borderline, or if I know I'm going to be struggling to use one, I'll just try to use it sooner rather than later. Where, you know, if it's like the Hilton ones, I do try to get those to a better place, but I would still redeem them for whatever, because, you know, $0 value, losing it is not worth it. And even if you get a great redemption, if you spent so much time and mental energy to get it, that's not worth it either. So I totally agree with you.
Yeah. Speaking of things that our friends screwed up, Sean, you're my friend. Last week on this podcast said that we spoke about the Ink Premier card that had Ultimate Rewards points that were not transferable. I mean, excuse me, cashback that was not transferable to Ultimate Rewards. And yes, we were mistaken. That card still does exist. So do not get that card. I mean, sorry, did I say we? Like, our friends were mistaken about that card, and it does still exist. So you definitely don't want that if you want to transfer your points to Ultimate Rewards.
So Joe is trying to blame me 100% for this, but based on the transcript, I say we're both guilty, but I'll take responsibility. I did say that. So yes, the Ink Premier does not earn Ultimate Rewards. You cannot transfer those to travel partners. You know, it's just straight cash back, or you could redeem them at 1 cent basically for like gift cards and stuff, but you can't. They're not full Ultimate Rewards points with that. And that is our fault. And thanks to everybody for calling us out, and we needed to make that correction. And yeah, we're not perfect, Joe.
Yes. My wife tells me every day. Every day.
All right. So let's give people some inspiration on where to travel. Lonely Planet revealed the world's top 50 destinations for 2024. And it's sort of weird because they did it by category. So there's like countries, regions, cities, sustainability is one category, and then value. And you have a weird sort of hodgepodge of places to go there. But it's actually very interesting. If you go to their site, we have an article about it. But if you go to their site, we'll provide a link. They have a really great like visual layout of all the different places, why they chose them. Let's start with countries. I'll let you pick one from the list that maybe is surprising to you.
Yeah, Mongolia. I mean, it's the first one on the list. I'm not sure if it's ranked in – I don't think it's ranked in order. I think they just did the top 10, although then maybe they would do it in alphabetical order. But I was just – you know, this is stupid American ignorance, right? But when I think Mongolia, like I think Siberia. I know they're completely different, you know, and I know one is – well, I guess technically part of China. But yeah, I was just surprised to see that on there. I'd be very curious. And, you know, I plan to after we're done talking, like what's going on in Mongolia that would be interesting to look at. So yeah, that's the one that stood out to me. Mongolia and then Philadelphia stood out to me. Those are the two that jumped off the page. I think Philadelphia is pretty cool, but I was just like, whoa, top 10 cities to visit. Like, you know, like, how you come up with that Lonely Planet? I don't even know.
I think it was written by Masons. That's my conspiracy theory, because it's the only reason you'd have Philadelphia on there. No, as far as Mongolia goes, three words, Mongolian goat vodka. That's why you go to Mongolia. It was incredible. I was just talking to Jasmine yesterday about it, believe it or not, that I want to go back there. We were there in 2008, and I've heard that Ulaanbaatar has just grown like insanely since then and changed, so it'd be unrecognizable. But the countryside's really the way to do that. You can go from Ulaanbaatar out to the countryside. A lot of unspoiled nature. There's still a lot of interesting nomadic culture there. It is sandwiched in between Russia and China, which has always been a very interesting graphical area, if you can think about geopolitics. And because of that, it's developed in some interesting ways. So yeah, it's not part of China. It's actually a big U.S. ally. A lot of people don't know that, as you might expect, sitting directly in between Russia and China. So the U.S. has poured a lot of dollars into Mongolia over the years. But I really loved it. Chile is on the list of countries. I really loved my visit to Chile. It's not one you hear people talk about a lot. I remember the street art in Valparaiso, which was great. I really loved Santiago as a capital city. I enjoyed that. Croatia is on the list, which is blown up so much, right? Everybody's going to Croatia these days. St. Lucia on the list, a Caribbean island. Kind of surprised to see that, but it is a beautiful island. I don't know if I remember anything about St. Lucia that's unique to St. Lucia, other than, you know, some of the geography there. But yeah, cities, you have cities like Izmir, Turkey, which a lot of awesome Roman ruins there. Kansas City, Missouri is another interesting one, Joe, making this list of 10. Mostar, Bosnia. Have you ever heard of that? Mostar has this incredible bridge that's like from ancient times and this really like preserved old city that feels very Middle Eastern. I would highly recommend Mostar, Bosnia. That's one, if you're going to Croatia, you can hop over there not too hard.
You're so well-traveled, Sean. Another one that I will highlight, you know, I haven't been to a lot of these places, but out of the places I have been, Hokkaido, Japan, it's under the sustainable category. Spain's there too. Of course, Spain's awesome, but Hokkaido, it was really great. Some of the best ice cream you'll ever have. I'm not sure, like their cows are like super spoiled. And so the ice cream is just like very creamy. It's amazing. So, you know, Hokkaido, Japan, definitely, you know, we went there in the winter too. I'm sure it's really nice in the summer, but you know, there's a lot of swimming up to, for those of you who don't know, Hokkaido is the northern island. Like if you look at Japan, there's kind of like three big islands that make up the country. And Hokkaido is the most northern one. It was I knew that it was winter there. It was more winter than I expected. We went during President's Week, U.S. President's Week. It was like one of those cities, you know, I assume Minnesota and places like that are like this, and Boston can get like this sometimes. The sidewalks were not sidewalks. They were just packed in snow. You know, it was like maybe a 6-inch layer of snow. I remember we were just dragging our suitcases through that. And, you know, the snow's so packed in because it's been there for like a couple months. But, you know, it's one of those kinds of places. But it was really awesome. Really great trip.
What I like about this list, and, you know, you say I'm well-traveled. I picked a few places I've been on the list. There's actually a ton of places I haven't been on here because it does, like, range from very kind of remote places that you wouldn't think of all the way to, like you said, under the value category, they have the Midwest U.S., which is like one you'd be like scratching your head at. But it's laid out pretty like well. US, and there's
everything in the U.S. is just catching strays, so I apologize.
Well, it's funny. It's like value, out of the U.S., Midwest. You have Montana. Okay, I can see Montana for region. I got that. Yep. All right, that's pretty. And then you have Philadelphia under city, and also Kansas City, Missouri. Those are the two cities that get there from the U.S. And then value, you have the Midwest U.S. That's it, though, as far as the list. It's an interesting pick for the U.S. stuff.
What are they even like? I need to look at the map. Like, what are they considering the Midwest? Like, we go in like Ohio to Michigan, and we're going a little further west. You know, are we counting Minnesota in that? Like, you know, I don't know. I'm sure Midwesterners have their opinions about like what actually constitutes the Midwest, but it's just funny that like that's just like an entire region. Another thing that stood out to me was I-trains in Europe for value, just because I think, as I've said many times, my son is obsessed with all things transportation. I'm sure he would love to do something like that. What's not on this list is there are like mega luxury trains in Japan, that, you know, it's like old school, like Orient Express, what you would imagine. I mean, the Orient Express still exists, but it's not as fancy. It's like what you expect from like luxury train cars. My wife and I looked into doing that both before we had kids and for our anniversary. It would have been a big splurge. You have to like book these trains like a year and a half in advance because there's only like a certain number of cars, and you like eat in the dining car and stuff like that. So, you know, train travel is still, I still think it's pretty cool. You know, I agree with my son on that.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting. I mean, Lonely Planet is historically, that's the travel guidebooks, right? A lot of backpackers. And I always used Lonely Planets back in the day when I was traveling, when we were backpacking and stuff, because, you know, the internet did exist and you could do some research, but you always wanted to have that one sort of guide, that sort of basic stuff that with you at all times when you would go. We didn't have smartphones and stuff. And I used Lonely Planet a lot. That or Rough Guides, one or the other, depending on the city that you were in. But it's good to see the brand going. It's owned by Red Ventures now, so for people who don't like Red Ventures. But I actually think they put this together in a great way. And like you said, it's everything from, you know, very generic things like the Midwest, but night trains in Europe, Echo Lodges in South Africa. It's one of those old-fashioned things to kind of inspire you and maybe open your eyes to things you haven't seen. Another cool thing on there, far north of Scotland, which I got to do last year. So there's really neat things, and then things that inspired me, like, oh, I really need to go there. Remind me that I need to go to Hokkaido. I have only been there on a layover, so I have not gotten out into the snow. And I think after your description, Joe, I'll stick to the summer visiting northern Japan, because that sounds like too much snow for me.
Yes, Sean, you can't handle it. You can go in the summer. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot like more to see in the summer. I've said this before on this podcast, but it was like years ago. We went also during this in the towns in Hokkaido. They have these lantern festivals, and so they built like all these like just local artists, actually local artists, and I think just local people. They built all these kinds of like snow sculptures that they put the lanterns in, and so at night it's like lit up like incredibly beautifully. And so, you know, a lot of different towns do them. We managed to catch, like, there was one town that its last night was like our first night there, and so we got to see one. If we had been there like a week or two earlier, we could have visited all the different towns. So, you know, that's why a lot of people go in the winter. There's also really good skiing up there for those of you who like to ski, though. Sean, I do not think you are one of those.
No, it's too cold for me. See me on a beach with the sun, and plus I'm too clumsy. That's the main reason I've never skied, Joe, is that I thought I would kill myself skiing into a tree. On that note, that's all we got this week. Where can people find you when they're not listening to this fine podcast?
You can find me at As a Joe Flies, all over social media. If you're looking to plan a trip, Joseph Chung at travelmation.net. Also, confirmed spring 2024 SATs computer only, for those of you who were on the edge of your seat wanting to know the latest in standardized test news in the United States of America. How about you, Sean?
I love how you put that little factoid at the beginning, made people sit on the edge of their seats the whole show, and then you delivered at the end, giving them the answer that they wanted.
Yeah, we got to keep them hooked.
Good job there. You can find me at Miles to Memories all over social media, every social media platform you can imagine. All of our post podcast videos, milestomemories.com. We're pretty full on the Diamond group. I think there's one or two slots left at milestomemories.com/diamond. If you're interested in diving in more, Slack, Facebook, all that good stuff. But like I said, everything we do, milestomemories.com. Thanks to everybody who's leaving us 5-star reviews, Apple Podcasts, who continues to listen. We really appreciate it. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next time.
See ya.